So, Maria, did you enjoy your butter biscuit?
Yes.
You did. Okay, you're still half digesting that.
Doctor, unless all of the patients are served breakfast at the same time, I cannot operate the kitchen with our present personnel.
Then hire more people to work in the kitchen.
But it is common practice in hospitals.
Ms. Fillmore, in my clinic, no patient shall be wakened from a health-giving sleep and forced to eat breakfast at a time which pleases the culinary union.
But in the interest of good economy...
Bad therapy is never good economy. If you must economize, do it in the doctor's dining room. And I will not have all the patients bathed at the stroke of a gong for the convenience of the nurses. One of the reasons for my founding this clinic is a firm conviction that patients are sick people, not inmates.
Of course, Dr. Pretorius.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Alapra Podcast. Joining me in studio is Mary. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Is that loud enough?
That's perfect. Thank you so much. Yes.
Okay.
Testing your levels, 1, 2, 3. We hope you enjoyed last week's episode. And here we are again to do it all over again. So in today's pod, we are talking about a movie from 1951 starring Cary Grant, starring a woman who was the Wicked Witch of the West in the Sound of Music. No, The Wizard of Oz. Wrong movie.
Very similar.
But she's uncredited. And also a man who was in episodes of The Saint and The Prisoner, which were classic series in the 60s. And believe it or not, the movie's called People Will Talk, just like this podcast, which is why we actually watched it in the first place.
Fancy that.
To explore, you know, from this kind of happenstance and curiosity, what can we discover? You know, we're bonded to this movie now in ways we never thought possible. And it's a movie that you can find for free on YouTube, colorized, and also on the Internet Movie Archive.
Just say Internet Archive.
Internet Archive, where you can find all kinds of documents and books, which we actually use for our fake news book.
Yeah.
Quite extensively in some chapters, others not so much. But
even the cover
came from there. So actually, a tremendous resource that you should definitely, definitely enjoy for whatever your needs are. Anyway, we've both watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
90 minutes of black and white Cary Grant goodness, or 2 hours actually. What are your initial thoughts?
It wasn't what I expected. When you look at the poster, for example, it's like the typical, I think it sort of like tries to sell like a romantic comedy or something like that, which definitely is not. In fact, I think we'll talk about how those bits are actually pretty cringy. They're the only things we didn't like about the movie, I believe.
You're right. So it is not really a romantic comedy.
At all.
What is it? Before we actually jump deeper into it, we should discuss the plot. So in broad strokes, Cary Grant, who you adore, we'll get into that also, some hot stuff. And anyway, I got lost there. Anyway, so we jump into the plot. He's a doctor who has some kind of radical therapies and techniques.
Hmm.
Which is actually quite interesting because the real life Cary Grant was about to enter a bit of a career slump in the 50s. And I think he had some emotional problems as well. So he was experimenting with LSD, which I think in the 50s would have been considered quite radical and alternative. So there's a bit of a parallel here between him and his character.
Hmm.
And so he works at a university and one of his colleagues, I think, who's jealous of him because he's definitely not Cary Grant, investigates him with a private investigator to see if he can rumble something that was maybe fraudulent or malpractice.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of dramatic thrust of the movie. But also he falls in love with this woman who gets pregnant. She faints. She tries to kill herself. So some heavy themes here we'll also discuss a little bit more.
Hmm.
And there's a whole thing where he...
she gets pregnant, but not by him.
Not by him. That's the thing.
That's the key.
And then he lies to her and then he comes clean about the fact that she's pregnant.
Hmm.
He gets engaged to her and there's There's a model train
it's
set.
It's got it all.
It's got it all. And then it kind of ends nicely. You know, it's from 1951. There's no spoilers here. So, you know, he gets the girl and his career is enhanced because he comes out clean, basically, from the trial. What also we should say is this is basically an allegory of McCarthyism as well, because the director was done for McCarthyism. I think he was investigated by the House of Un-American Activities.
Hmm.
And this trial is also as kind of bizarre and witch huntery in the movie as you would probably expect a McCarthy trial to be as well. There's the context. The scene is set. Now back to your initial thoughts.
I've forgotten now. So no, you don't really expect like such deep topics. I think we talked after we watched it about how it had like some really modern themes. So obviously, I think you already mentioned about abortion. There's also like other things to do with just kind of like philosophical discussions, really, because there's a scene at the beginning where they're talking about a man's will and, well, a man in the sense of like human, you know, right to decide things and to discern. And it's quite a deep thing that you don't really see these days, I don't think, in most movies. So another characteristic was that the screenplay is like really meaty. I don't think many things are there just for the sake of it. So that's quite refreshing.
Yes, because if you talk about the big topics, there's her suicide attempt.
That is true, yeah. Well, that is packed in the first half an hour. There's like talk of abortion, there's a suicide or attempted suicide.
Yeah, because Cary Grant implies that she could do that. And for the 1950s, for 1951, the fact that he's like, you know, I mean, you can do it and it's not wrong is quite explosive, I think. It's quite surprising. Hmm. And then you mentioned man's will. There's also talk of Korean War veterans. Which is really interesting because in 1946, one of the great directors who went to World War II, I think Five Came Back is the name of the documentary on Netflix, but it explores, you know, these great directors who went to World War II and record things. And one of them made a documentary about men who had been traumatized by the war, and it got suppressed by the American government. So, you know, a few years later, in a Hollywood movie that they actually address it with a current war, the Korean War at that time, also is quite shocking and surprising. And then when he meets the girl's father, because she's madly in love with him, he's Cary Grant, as we mentioned. And
that's one of the weakest things. Like, she actually falls in love with him just by sort of
his great bedside manner, essentially, and his cheesy jokes. But the father is, you know, he's a failed businessman. He's a dependent because he's a bit disabled. And he talks about being a burden on his brother who looks after him.
Hmm.
And it's quite sobering and quite serious as well. So, yeah, very meaty, which might be due in part to its origins, because it's not originally a movie, is it?
No, it's actually a play. And the character, the main character, Cary Grant, he's actually meant to be German, although they are in the States. And yeah, it's interesting because it actually came from a German play from the 1920s. So I suppose like some of those themes, in a way, we tend to think they were quite modern for the time, but it's true that in general in the 1920s, even in Germany precisely, there's kind of like a wave of modernism, or like, you know, things are more open, more in Spain it was the same, and then later on this sort of like this regression in the 1940s.
Well, it strangely ends in 1933. I don't know what happened there in Germany.
Well,
that was a bad joke. I apologize.
Musical interlude.
Not moving on, but on this theme, the fact that it is a play is, I think, quite obvious in the script, because it is very, very stagey. It's essentially a series of long scenes where it's two people speaking, which is what you'd imagine a play to be. I mean, not what you'd imagine. It is what a play is, because
plays have been invented.
Because plays are essentially long scenes, because you can't really change the setting very frequently. So a scene will very much last an act, and then you have the change of the stage and stuff. And that's very much to the movie's strength, because again, if you're on a diet of Marvel movies and Wars of Stars, which is totally fine.
Wars of Stars.
It's a lot of, frenetic action. And this is just a nice kind of simple story. Well, not so simple, but it's well told. And it's just, you know, dialogue and character driven. And surprisingly, a flop at the time, actually. People didn't like it. But I think it holds up quite well because of its modern themes and its bravery in tackling them. But and also the fact that it's a German play. One of his best friends is a German guy, which I thought was maybe interesting, because again, this is a few years after World War II and you have a very sympathetic German character. So there's a lot of things there that I think pique your interest. Now, also we can talk about the filmmaking style, which I have some thoughts on, but I know as well there's some scenes that you thought were a bit silly. maybe the train one in particular.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
First of all, when you were saying about the German, and I think the director was of Polish origin as well, so I mean that ties in with the whole historical thing as well. But yeah, that's just a kind of like ridiculous scene where they play with trains, and she gets him, like a model train, and they're all going around going choo choo and. And fine, it's not about, you know, he says, Mama, she goes to the shop and he's like, it's for a 40-year-old man. Which I think you also wanted to mention about the humor and how sometimes it's tricky to get. It's meant to be like hilarious and, you know, some things are like a bit weird now. But she gets a train. In fact, there's nothing wrong with like a 40-year-old play with trains. But it's just kind of like so out of the blue. It's like a scene that could come from another Cary Grant movie. That sort of playful character of like being a bit like childish but charming at the same time and all this. And then straight after is one of the most important scenes where she actually finds out that she's still pregnant. So it's all a weird mixture.
It's like it's the contractually obliged scene of Cary Grant buffooning around, because he's playing serious on purpose, and you get Jim Carrey types or whatever playing dramatic roles after years of playing comedic roles. But, you know, they don't have a scene in those movies where they're acting the clown, you know, to appeal to their audience, because the whole point of doing something serious is to break away from those comedic origins.
Yeah. I really don't know what that was about. But there's another movie by Grant.
Oh, here we go.
Called Arsenic.
And Lace.
Yes, with Lace or Wrapped in Lace or something like that. And it's him and two grannies, and the two grannies are trying to poison everybody that comes around. And so it is to say that he was known for being that character, and it's refreshing to see him in something like that. And I literally have no idea why they felt they had to. It's really off-putting, that scene. So I don't know why they felt they had to do that.
Yeah, and you mentioned the jokes. Yeah, it is supposed to be a funny movie, and it's pleasant. But it's never really funny, and it's really strange because you can see the jokes that they're making and they should work, but it's something in the delivery which maybe just doesn't appeal to modern audiences, because other movies from the time can still be funny. You know, humor does date, but doesn't have to date in all cases. But yeah, the mechanics of how to tell the jokes, how to introduce, is just a bit stiff or a bit weird, and it loses something. But also as well in how it's put together, there's a few scenes. There's technical challenges, obviously. It's a movie from 1951. So most sound in movies is recorded by a Foley artist. So if you're opening up a door, it's something that someone's recording in the studio separately. There's one or two moments in this movie where it's obvious that they recorded the sound on location, which is quite strange for a Hollywood movie. Or the camera's quite static. There's a very interesting scene where they go to the farmhouse where the girl that he loves is living with her father and his brother, and a dog attacks them, and Cary Grant gets out of the car and walks slowly to the gate, and the dog still barks, and he walks back, and then his manservant.
That's one of my favorite.
Well, it's a bit weird because like the manservant and friend then walks over, you know, and then the dog quietens down, but it's a very kind of slow, you know, like faraway shot, and there's no editing really there because they had big bulky cameras that they didn't move around
to
very often.
To me, it's like you can really see that the trainer is behind
Yeah.
The camera sort of like, you know, signaling to the dog. And then the dog very slowly walks backwards. As in, you know, this is how I'm supposed to do before I get a treat. It's quite funny. Yeah, quite charming.
Yeah, so it's just very much of its time, but for the most part, it holds up. Now, we mentioned the McCarthyism element also, which I think we can touch on a little bit more, because we mentioned to each other before we started recording that there's very few movies that actually talk about McCarthyism. You know, you do have a lot of movies from the time that would talk about the existential threat of the Russians and the Cold War and nuclear attacks, but very few about McCarthyism per se. The only one I can think of really is Trumbo, I think his name in the movie, with Bryan Cranston. He was a screenwriter of Spartacus. And he was blacklisted for a long time until Kirk Douglas brought him back into their fold. So essentially, while he was blacklisted, he was writing under a pseudonym. And then there's like Jim Carrey, who we mentioned before, who was in a movie called The Majestic, I believe, which is also linked to McCarthyism. But aside from that, it's a very underexplored topic in movies. And to have it done in 1951, especially when it's very raw, again, is another, I think, strength to the movie. Now, with all that out of the way, explain more about why Cary Grant is just simply amazing.
No, I think, well, at the time he played like a lovable character. I think a lot of people liked him because, yeah, he always played sort of like this good, hearted, gentleman, if you like. And it was funny, like the facial expressions and all this. I think another thing that people liked was because like he used like RP, receive pronunciation, because obviously originally he was English, but then he went over to America, so he had this soft accent. I don't know.
I have it on good authority that your favorite Cary Grant movie is The Guns of Navarone.
No, you said this before, like, you don't fool me. No, there's nothing wrong with, like, war movies, you know? But I don't believe he was in it.
He was in it, yeah.
Was he? Well, I don't know, but are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't really remember. I mean, like, all these old movies we used to tape from, yes, I'm old, from TV, my sister and I, and actually Lados, that we've been...
That's the RP there, isn't it? My sister and I recorded it.
But what do you want to say?
Me and my sister, I don't know.
Me and my sister, me and my sister, like... So my sister and I, we taped it off the TV. So, I mean, the end of the sentence is not very posh. But La Dos, with an interview at, they used to have like, they used to put these classic movies on. And mostly they didn't have adverts. So yeah, we just stayed them all, and I used to watch them with my sisters, and perhaps, you know, Guns of Navarone probably was in top of our list when you're like 12.
There's what was it? It was what's that Brad Pitt movie where your mother walked in?
Legends of the Fall.
Oh, that must have been embarrassing.
Because my mom had like, I don't know, she just had a skill. This must be a mother thing for sure. But she just had a skill to, it's like a clean, completely clean movie. But if there was like one dodgy scene, then she would just walk in. So just, I don't know, some Sunday afternoon, and my sister and I were watching this. And it's like 3.5 hours long or something like that. While they were in mass, I believe. And
oh, that makes it even worse.
But like, well, when she came back, and I mean, I think there's only like one dodgy scene which I remember, which is not even that dodgy, but well, I don't know. It's lots of Japanese naked women piled on top of Brad Pitt. But nothing's really happening.
That's the title of the podcast. Naked Japanese Women on Brad Pitt.
Yeah, but then we're
episode
gonna,
3 of season 10.
Then we're gonna get censored. So yeah, so he was like, what are you watching?
Well, if you like Japanese women or Brad Pitt, you know what movie to watch. To make you feel better, I used to have a huge collection of VHS tapes of movies, not Japanese people. So a massive collection on tape off the telly as well. Very charming in its own way, because you have the TV adverts from the time. Some people, you know, have whole channels on YouTube based around old vintage adverts and all that stuff.
Well, I've told you that about Breakfast at Tiffany's before, I'm sure. Like, I never saw the beginning for, I don't know, 20 years or something.
Yeah.
Because we had it taped and we missed the beginning. So I didn't know what the first like 15 minutes were like.
That would be a great book, wouldn't it? Or a great documentary?
What?
Just people who've seen movies from VHS tapes and they have actually missed for many years.
Yeah, well, it was quite, yeah. It had its charm. I mean, it's just a long bygone era now, isn't it? I mean...
Well, speaking of bygone eras, just to circle back briefly to The People Will Talk movie starring Cary Grant from 1951. You know, the woman who's in that movie, she had a few hits or a few big roles, this included. But because this movie was a flop, she was let go by that studio. She had to sign with another studio. Which, you know, leads back into the idea of the studio system. Because I mentioned to you yesterday about Spike Lee. Spike Lee had no money to make his movies in the 80s. So a whole different type of cinema, really. And one of his friends gave him $10,000. He got an inheritance. He scrounged. He did, you know, community funding, crowdfunding before it was that really a thing. And, you know, we really are in the independence age of cinema. Obviously, big studios still exist, but it's just kind of really inspiring and amazing how filmmakers can beg, borrow and steal the equipment to make their movies. Even Werner Herzog said, like, if you don't have a camera, just steal one and make your movie. Making the movie is paramount. But back in the 50s, it's just this very rigid studio system as well. And People Talk was definitely a product of that studio system, as we can see with what happened with the actors afterwards as well. All right. So before we start wrapping up, classic movies. There are amazing ones, a lot of amazing ones out there. Do you have any other recommendations? Non-dodgy ones?
Well, no, used to watch a lot of Hitchcock ones.
Sounds dodgy?
No, of course not. But I don't know, things like Rebecca. Well, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I know Rebecca. No, I've seen it, but I know, I'm aware of it, yes.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, some of the things were like, oh, well, Psycho, of course. I mean, the classics that still really influence modern cinema. So, and some of like the big directors nowadays always talk about how they were highly influenced by these classics as well.
In fact, I actually have one last question for you.
Go on then. I was seeing in your face that something like mischievous was forming.
No, it's just, you know, I've recommended series to you like Better Call Saul or Peaky Blinders, and it usually takes you 2 to 5 years to watch them. Can you explain why there's that time delay, this lag?
Well, I mean, there's a saying in Spanish, well, it's the same as better late than never, basically. So, I mean, you know, I just have my time to, like, ruminate and all this.
Okay. Fine, I accept that. Well, that's it. If you have the time and or the inclination, you can find People Will Talk on YouTube or the Internet Archive. Enjoy. Thank you very much. Good luck. Bye.
Bye-bye.